A caller says, I wish people would stop going on and on about climate change, climate action, climate commitment, climate justice and all that fear-mongering. It's all a scam and as Donegal people, we have a duty not to be deluded by it. The climate has always been changing. Whether you believe it's down to human activity or not, there's an acceleration in change, I think. But anyway, that's your view. Bill de Dam for Letterkenny says, a listener, and leave the water in the Pollen Dam for the people of Inishowen. I think the big issue for the people of Inishowen is getting pipes that actually don't constantly burst all of the time. What about the ghost estates in Remelton? Joe McHugh announced a big $22 million job the council were doing to fix this up years ago, not a spade on site yet. Another, why can we not bring life to derelict buildings in town centres that have now been bypassed where people in the past lived? These houses would be in walking distance of shops, schools, healthcare centres. The electricity and water connections are already in place. Indeed, and maybe the derelict properties grant, it is there. Or the vacant property grant, it's the same sort of a scheme. There is that option. But also, I think you're right, there could be an enhanced scheme, along the same lines for town centres. It probably would require a little bit more money, etc. Is that the same company that was given €16,000 to name Irish Water? That's, in case you didn't hear, in the first hour of the show we referenced, it cost $4,500 to name the Irish Children's Hospital Ireland, the Children's Hospital Ireland. Probably the same. It's the same process anyway. Hi, Greg. A few ideas for a name for the Children's Hospital, the Money Pit, and or the Taxpayers' Folly. They've got rings to them. They sound more like horses, to be honest with you. But yeah, I see exactly where you're coming from. Good morning, everyone on Highland Radio. Good morning. I have two hearing aids, and they usually need fixed twice a year at €120 for one aid to be fixed, so €480 a year. There used to be a grant that we were entitled to one fix per year for each aid. Now the famous government has it one fix every 4 years. Hearing aids are €2,000 each. Could you please contact a TD? Highland's great for highlighting our difficulties. Well, we'll chase that up as much as we can. I mean, a TD will probably go, God, that's wild. What difference would it make? I don't know. I wasn't aware of those changes. Thank you for that. Hi, Greg. The water has burst in Clonmany for 2 days in a row. They need to fix all the pipes ASAP. See, sometimes I think with our water infrastructure, you fix, and I've seen this actually with water, getting a pump at home. You improve water pressure or change a piece of piping, and then the water flows down, and there's very little as powerful as water. And next thing you know, it exposes the weaknesses in the next run of piping. So then you fix the leaks on that for ages, and then a couple of years down the line, you change that pipe, and then it pushes the leaks and the bursts further down the line. I mean, 45, 46% of our treated water is being lost. I mean, that's a national disgrace. A caller says, I suggest that the new children's hospital is named the Hope National Children's Hospital. I think that's actually quite a more of a pleasant one. I think they should just call the new children's hospital the Money Pit, and a couple of people calling it the Money Pit. There's a water leak beside me for 5 years now and has been brought to their attention on several occasions, and it hasn't been repaired. So it's a consistent leak for 5 years. And you've raised it with Irish Water and still it leaks. I mean, how much water would have been lost from that pipe over 5 years, even if it were a trickle? Send us a picture if you can. Hi, Greg. Just want to ask your listeners if anyone in the county are having issues with Donegal County Council's parking app. Since Monday of this week, you're no longer able to pay for your parking via the app prior to 9 a.m. I work Monday to Friday, starting work at 8:45, and park in a car park in Boncrana that is in control of the council. I pay for my parking every morning via the app on the way to my work. I don't want to forget about it and end up receiving a fine. I no longer have this option for paying for my parking via the app at 8:45, meaning I'm heading to work and expected now to remember to pay for my parking at 9 a.m. It also appears that one can no longer pay at the parking meters prior to 9 a.m. either. I work in a company with quite a lot of staff, and we're now required to either remember at 9 a.m. to log into our app to pay our parking, or to return to our vehicles at 9 a.m. and pay parking via the parking meters. I find it an extremely sly move by Donegal County Council in that there will no doubt be an increase in parking tickets issued from the traffic wardens due to the inconvenience now caused. Thanks for raising this, and I'd be interested in hearing other people's thoughts on the issue. issue and whether there's any comment from the council regarding this change. Well, we're going to chase that up. Caroline, we have chased this up, but we're going to chase this up about the parking charges. Yeah, we have an inquiry in. We're going backwards, of course. That makes a lot of sense that you can pay in advance for the parking for when the parking charge is applicable. So, of course, we're going to find out what's going on there. Maybe it's an app glitch. Has anyone else experienced that around the county? Let us know. 086 60 25,000. Because I'm thinking, too, if I was, say, I was in Boncrana and I arrived to stay in B&B or something at 9 o'clock in the evening and went out, had a few drinks or whatever it might be, I couldn't pay for my parking from the app before 9. So that really doesn't make sense. It's counterintuitive. I doubt it's to try and catch people out, because I don't think the council operate like that. But it certainly is a change that needs to be addressed. Leave it with me. We're going to go. We're going to get some information for you in relation to that, as we commit to do. That's precisely what we are going to do. Rightio. Let's see. I think we have a message in from someone via, I think, Caroline, you might have deleted that, or Caroline, that voice message, you might have deleted it, or is it, you haven't given me the number, I don't know when, on the which text it is, but someone, I think this is it. Okay, yeah, but that could be someone telling me to F off again. Anyway, this is what someone believes about the presidency.
You're on there about a president election. I don't think we need a president in this country. I think it should be done away with. Money spent better.
All right, money spent better. That's one listener's brief point of view. Don't forget, you can send your voice messages in to 086 60 25,000 on WhatsApp. A caller says, why they say three whys. Why do parents of twins and triplets get so much extra in benefits? Every child needs the same amount, you'd think. What makes these children parents need this anymore? What about families with kids with disabilities or cancer? So I was wondering, well, what's this all about? So twins or triplets. If you have twins, you get 1.5 times the normal monthly rate of child benefit for each child. For triplets and other multiple births, child benefit is paid at double the normal monthly rate for each child. I did not know this. That's quite interesting. So if you have twins, you get 1.5 times the normal monthly rate of child benefit for each child. And then if you have triplets, and these are rare enough, I suppose, or other multiple births, child benefit then is paid at double the monthly rate for each child. So it doesn't graduate down. So it's not like you get, you know, whatever it is for child and then less for the subsequent children. Twins get 1.5 months equivalent, and triplets per child. You now, I presume, is there additional costs, or why is that? I don't really begrudge anyone that. I didn't know about it, though. What do you think? 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number. Can this be highlighted on Greg's show? Water off in Corrent on a Mallentown, Mallenhead area for 48 hours because of a burst pipe. We were told at the start it'd be fixed within a few hours. Now we're told it might be tonight, yeah. And that I referenced that a little earlier on. That's the one that keeps slipping. Hard to get fresh information on it from my perspective anyway. Councillor Michael McClafferty texts in, thank you to our local water crews who've worked throughout the night in the Dunfanaghy Creasla area. However, people outside Creasla may still be affected for several hours by a water outage. Drimnor Raw in particular, as it's become challenging at present to balance the water out. Water everywhere except in your taps. Now, we're joined on the programme by Professor Maeve Egan, who is consultant obstetrician and gynaecologist and national clinic lead with SATU. That's an arm of the HSC. Thanks so much for joining us this morning. I appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
We have now the latest annual report of the country's 6 sexual assault treatment units. I suppose maybe before we talk about the situation in Donegal, what do you see as the, what stands out for you in the national picture, Maeve?
I suppose since 2009, we've been collating national statistics for the 6 sexual assault treatment units. There's a unit in Dublin, Waterford, Cork, Mullingar, Galway and Donegal. And the aim is that nobody in the country is more than 3 hours from their nearest sexual assault unit. And year on year, we've generally been seeing an increase in attendances, although this year is fairly stable. This year and last year are fairly stable from the previous years. And I suppose the increase, sometimes people say, oh, is the increase a worry? And hopefully the increase is people seeking care and attention after they've experienced sexual violence and being able to receive the appropriate care. So including if they needed emergency contraception, preventative treatment for sexually transmitted infections, emotional and psychological support, forensic examination, for example, where we take DNA samples or specimens, if that's relevant, and also follow-up care, because this is something that happens to somebody. It's potentially the most stressful and unexpected experience that's ever happened to them in their life. So it's not appropriate for us just to see them once and send them off. So the sort of the headline statistics as such are that there is no typical patient. There is no typical scenario.
But we are seeing increases in certain areas. There's been an increase in the number of people that have been assaulted by two or more individuals, and also an increase in violence, I suppose, the use of weapons in instances of sexual violence, physical restraints also showing increases. So what does that tell us?
Yeah, it is a concern that the incidents that we are seeing are becoming increasingly violent, increasingly associated with injury, albeit that only a very small number of people had to be hospitalised after injury. Nevertheless, these are people who had a totally unexpected event happen to them and end up with quite significant physical and emotional trauma. And that is a concern. We also saw an increase in the number of people who were restrained by the neck, which is now a standalone offence of non-fatal strangulation. So it is a concern. And it's really important that as a society that we address this. And, you know, obviously there's a lot more discussion now about consent starting in earlier age groups and in early secondary school. And that's all really important because this is not acceptable. And as a society, we need to counter this while we need to be providing support for people when they've experienced it. And indeed, by doing that and collecting metrics, collecting data, we can use that to inform ongoing initiatives and ensure that the care we provide is important and appropriate for the needs of the people who attend us. And we don't just see women. You know, sometimes people think that sexual violence is just within the remit of female patients. That is not true.
Yeah, 91% of people using SATU services last year were female, 8% were male, 1% identified as another gender or none. Are the demographics staying steady in terms of numbers, or are we seeing an increase or decrease in any areas?
Yeah, we're seeing a slight increase in the proportion of male patients over the last number of years. But interestingly, from the sexual violence survey, who they did a large survey of the prevalence of sexual violence in men and women, the prevalence in men is probably higher than the proportion that we're seeing in the sexual assault units. So again, we need to ensure that people know that the sexual assault services are there to respond to men as well as women and people of other genders.
In terms of the whole idea of it is that you come forward, you seek assistance, you seek help, you seek support. It's not a given that you have to report this to the Gardaí. That's the choice that someone can make, albeit that, you know, if there's evidence to be gathered, that can be retained so someone can make a decision down the line. But a quarter of people who did not want to report the matter to Gardaí opted for a sexual health screen with no forensic samples taken. So that's one in four people who were clearly the victims of a sexual assault that chose not to report. As I say, that's their decision. But it would be interesting to dig a little deeper as to why they chose that path.
Well, the other thing is that there is no statute of limitations on sexual crime. So something can happen to somebody today and in 4 years' time they can decide to report it. Obviously, if there hasn't been DNA samples taken, the DNA element can't be used in the adjudication or the investigation of the crime. But sometimes why somebody will come to us for a sexual health screen is that they're only actually disclosing an incident that happened maybe a month or so ago. And the time for DNA evidence has passed. So there isn't the sort of urgency for them to make the decision about the reporting. So sometimes it's not that they will never report, but just at that point, there isn't a point in taking DNA samples because after 7 days, there isn't a point in taking DNA samples. But we will still see people. And I suppose what we need to remember is sexual violence is ultimately the withdrawal of somebody's choice completely. So it's really important in the sexual assault services that we provide people with choice, and we don't say this is the only way to do it. And fine, from a societal basis, we may really want people to report and because of the benefits of that for the rest of us, but equally the individual has to be in the right time and space to make that report. And as I say, the benefit is there is no statute of limitations, so someone can report something today that happened them many years ago.
It is better, of course, if a person who is the victim of one of these crimes gets into the local SATU as soon as is possible, even if they're undecided, because they may choose to have forensic samples taken, which are stored for a year. So that gives them plenty of space to decide what they want to do next. But it also means they have evidence for whenever they make that decision, if it is to proceed. And again, though, that is up to each individual. But just know in the back of your mind that you cover all of your options and hopefully get the very best of care the sooner you attend.
And there's always someone at the end of the phone, you know. Just making that call can be the hardest thing to do, but equally people shouldn't feel that they're going to be pushed into making a decision very quickly. There is time.
Well, there's no pushing at all, is there? It is completely up to, I mean, there's guidance.
And it's about hearing. Like, the thing about it is that people often have never considered what they do because they don't imagine this is something that's ever going to happen to them. So, you know, it is important when it does happen, or if it happens to somebody known to you, that you support them to get the advice and options available to them.
There can be really high profile historic cases, or maybe someone in the local community is before the courts or what have you, and it triggers something in someone to say, right, I'm going to come forward now. Do we know the breakdown of you know, recent assaults versus historical assaults in terms of SATU attendance?
Yeah, so in terms of people who attend the sexual assault units, the much greater number are recent incidents. Yeah. So within the past week, within the past month. While we will sometimes see people where an incident has happened a long time ago because they're worried they may have contracted a sexually transmitted infection or had some kind of injury or anatomical disruption at the time, most of the people, by virtue of the work we do in SATU, most of the people are more recent incidents. Whereas with An Garda Síochána or rape crisis, in terms of emotional support, the balance may be more tipped towards people who are a long time since the incident. And those supports do exist. And the rape crisis phone line is available around the clock from any part of the country, and indeed from international. I mean, we've had people where incidents have happened internationally and they have phoned the rape crisis phone line. So it is important that people know there's also emotional support, as well as the kind of legal part or the medical part.
Do you find that, you know, obviously the population has grown significantly in recent years and people have come from different parts of the world and may not necessarily know what services are available locally or what have you. Are you seeing the population change reflecting, or maybe, I don't know if this is even counted, reflecting proportionally to the changing demographics?
Yeah, I mean, certainly, while the majority of people that we see them after incidents that happened in Ireland, and they are people who are born in Ireland, every year we see a significant proportion of people who weren't born in Ireland. And in fact, we have access around the clock to interpretive services. And we report each year the proportion where we needed interpreter services, which generally range between 2 and 4%, and up to 70 languages. So that's, and rape crisis equally have interpreter services as well. So we try to be responsive to the needs of the people that we see. But it is important that we also make sure that our education and our outreach informs people, not just people who are born in Ireland, but an instance happened in Ireland, but inform people throughout every layer of society, and every group, that they know the services exist and the services can be accessible for them too. And indeed, every year we see people where incidents happen abroad. So they may happen on holidays and the person comes back to Ireland, or by virtue of an incident that happened, the person has become an applicant for international protection from abroad. So there can be huge complexity in terms of the cases that we see. But the important thing for people to know is that there is care there is services there. And it is important that people know that they won't be pushed down a particular pathway of reporting. They won't suddenly find themselves in a court without knowing what's happened to them. They absolutely will be supported all the way along to make the decision that's right for them at the time.
Yeah. And just to remind people again that the sexual assault treatment units in Letterkenny and wherever are for men and women as well too. So the men are reflected in there. 8% of those engaging with the services, not just shy of 1 in 10, maybe 1 in 12, mm-hmm. are men, and those services are there. And there's no shame at all in going in and seeking support if you're a victim of a crime. Obviously, you're dealing with people who are victims of crime, and then there's the sort of societal attention as to how we find ourselves here. You know, if you look at the increase in violence, if you look at the age profile, half of those attending under 25, the average age 28. You know, there's other things that need to happen about education in terms of consent and what have you. I know there are some efforts, but we need to do more. People being found guilty of these crimes and people knowing that there are convictions and what have you, and just trying to change our attitude, you know, our respect for each other, what is right, what's wrong, what's yes, what's no, to try and bring these numbers down, because you can only be there to assist anyone that reaches out, right? But outside mm-hmm. of that, we also need to figure out mm-hmm. what's going on. We shouldn't be going in the direction we're going.
Hmm. And what's equally as important is the role of the bystander. So, for example, when people witness bad behaviour between two others, you know, they witness a peer making derogatory comments or pushing somebody into doing something they don't want to do, that the bystander has the strength to stand up and say, that's not acceptable. And we call people out and we, you know, talk about it and talk about difficult scenarios or near miss scenarios or whatever, in order that we try and mitigate the risk of those happening again. Mm. And equally, you know, I think the consent conversation, you're right, it's starting, but it's so much better than it was. I mean, mm. I went to university in the 1990s. Nobody ever talked about consent, you know, workshops or anything like that.
But you didn't also have really high profile personalities pushing the men can do whatever they want agenda too for their own mm-hmm. financial gain. So it's actually mm-hmm. even gotten, you know, that's why we have to make sure and we use the right voices and reach the right people to absolutely. Counteract that narrative that's out there, that yeah. someone says no until they say yes or whatever it might be, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, things have changed.
And Cooen, who are the statutory agency to the Department of Justice, are doing a lot of awareness raising as well, you know, in terms of, you know, media advertising and appropriately placed, you know, public awareness campaigns. And I think we can't ever tick the box and say that's done. We need to continue on these discussions. And, you know, it is also really good when high profile people also tell their stories and what's happened. Mm-hmm. And people who have, you know, completed cases and waived their right to anonymity, which must be a really difficult thing to do, and highlight the journey that they went on, and you know how difficult it was, because obviously a criminal case can take a number of years to come through, and the person's life is almost on pause in that context. So there are a lot of really, really strong and brave people who are really helping this story.
Yes.
And it's just important that we don't rest on our laurels, and that we ensure that we continue to advocate for supports and continue to provide support and care bespoke to what people need.
All right, thank you so very much for your time. It's greatly appreciated. That's Professor Maeve Egan, who's consultant obstetrician and gynaecologist and national clinical lead with the sexual assault treatment units with the HSE. 91% of people using SATU services in 2024 were female, 8% were male, 1% identified as another gender or none. And what else did I want to mention? Yes, the Letterkenny Centre reported a modest increase in the number of people using their services. But just the things to note, there's been an increase in victims of sexual assaults by two or more individuals. It increased to 10% in 24 from 9% in 23, 7% in 22. And physical violence, the use of weapons in instances of sexual violence, more than doubled to 7% last year, with physical restraints, often choking, strangulation being used in 36% of all reported cases. And that worries me. That really does worry me, because it's something you see, you know, it's something you would see sort of where a lot of young fellas, primarily, and women, get their sexual education. And unfortunately, that's on porn sites. And that seems to be a feature. All right, back with more after these. John's with me now. John, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm good. You're living in Inishowen, and we were talking about water outages. You're a victim of this. What's the situation? Where are you?
Just outside the town of Carndonna.
Right, okay.
As you head from Mobile, and this is the third day without a water supply. Now, I contacted Irish Water this morning, and the young lady I was speaking with, I assume she's a young lady, she asked me for my postal code number, and I gave it to her. And then she asked me for my bill number, to which I said to her, I'm a domestic consumer and we don't have bills. That's only for commercial. And then I said, where am I speaking to? Turned out she was from India.
Okay.
I don't think she even knew where Ireland was or is. And my issue is with Irish Water there. And up to a few years ago, their head office was based just off O'Connell Street and Talbot Street in Dublin.
Mm-hmm.
And the, some of the people I spoke with there a few years back, where there was a water issue, hadn't a clue of where Donegal was. And not a clue. And I said to the person I was talking to, are you from Ireland? And he said, I am, but I've never been to Donegal. Mm-hmm. It's too far north. I said, Killarney is further south than where you are at the moment in Talbot Street. It's 230 miles to Killarney, and to get up here to Inishowen is 160. It didn't take a mathematical genius to know that it's nearer to Inishowen from Dublin than from Killarney to Dublin. But my issue is that Irish Water is extremely badly run, and if we had the ESB run in the same manner as Irish Water, I would be without electricity in the rural area, and you too, because you're living in rural Ireland, for many a long month. They don't know where we are. They don't care where we are, whether it's in West Kerry, West Donegal. They just don't know.
I think,
and they couldn't care less.
Even if you didn't know where Donegal was, or you didn't know where Inishowen was, if that's bad enough, you should probably know the structure of the company, i.e. residential customers don't pay for water, businesses do.
Yes. And to ask me for my bill number, my account number. When I heard that, I knew straight away this person hadn't a clue as to what was going on in this country in relation to the supply of water, domestic and commercial. Now, my issue is this, is that Irish Water was taken, Irish Water was formed. It was taken from the hands of the local authority. And you know as well as I do, well, I think you would, that your local county council knows every backyard, every tap, everything around the place. And fair dues to them, that is their job. Today, they're not involved yet, not directly involved, yet when it comes to the necessary repair to be carried out, who's coming out to do it? Your local council people. They're the ones with the pick and shovel and the small digger and so on. Nobody from Talbot Street is coming up here. And I think it's wrong. They've gone, the government of Enda Kenny, after the crash, went down the same road as Maggie Thatcher by privatising, almost privatising, Irish Water. Because when you say that somebody, when I say that somebody from Bangladesh or wherever it is answering me and hasn't a clue where, Ireland is not a mind in its own. I have a problem.
Yeah, well, Irish Water, Ish Gerin, are now saying that your water won't be on till 7 p.m. tonight, and then you have to allow three to... John, settle now, I haven't finished. 7 p.m. tonight, and then you have to allow 3 or 4 hours for service to properly resume. That's their latest update. So you're looking
the
at...
The pressure to be built.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then for the nonsense to be flushed out and what have you. But it's...
Well, there has been a local issue where the burst pipe is. Now, I'm speaking very colloquial.
That's fine, we love that.
This burst pipe... Pardon?
That, we love parochial colloquial stuff. Go on ahead, that's what we're here for.
Well, okay. This burst pipe, is not where the pipe is burst, it's not the first time it's happened in recent years. And it's on private property. and the gentleman who owns the property has an issue with the repair system that's been carried out, as the repair is not fit for purpose. And I gather, just a second hand, that he's insisting that a proper repair job be carried out, or no repair job at all, off my property. And I think he's right, because his property is being damaged by flooding water coming in from poor quality maintenance. So I don't blame him, whoever he is, I do not know. This is I call it second-hand information, but when two different people in two different places tell me the same thing, I have a tendency to accept. Now, I know that the local authority are doing their best to do X, Y, Z, but at the end of the day, the people who are really responsible, with their good salaries and guaranteed pension, which is more than you've got, if you don't mind me putting it that way.
I don't have one, but yeah, you're right.
Well, you know, you're a commercial radio station that's been pounded day in, day out by a heavily subsidised radio station, and you're battling against the wind. When these senior civil servants don't know, understand or care about rural Ireland. This morning I heard, actually on RT Radio, where a letter came in from a place called Letter Finish.
Mm-hmm.
And the two people that were in discussion about it made a rather joke of it. Letter Finish is a townland about 7 to 10 miles outside the town of Killarney, mm-hmm. which I think you may have a knowledge of.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the two people on RT Radio at that time this morning was a Kerry person from the Gaeltacht. And when I just shook my head and I thought, I said, you people don't know your own map.
Mm.
Now, I have travelled the length and breadth of Donegal, and I think I know a fair bit of it. But however, let's get back to the water issue. Let me get back to the water issue. It is wrong. I'm in my 80s, and so is my wife. And now we're having to draw bottled water. Okay, we've been working out for 40 plus years of our lives in semi-state and state industry. Well, state, I should say, and private. And to have this, it's just wrong for the local authority not to have the powers to be able to go out and do the job without having to make a phone call to Dublin, and Dublin say, where are you? Okay, we'll allocate the money, and if the money is available, it's available. If it isn't available, we'll wait. Now, I know you told me that full supply is expected around 7 o'clock this evening. Pardon me. I can tell you if this happened a half a mile outside O'Connell Street, they wouldn't have to wait until 7 o'clock this evening.
I think that pretty much sums it up. John, listen, best wishes to you and your wife. Thank you so much for joining us. And I really do hope returns as scheduled. But it's already, the timeline's already slipped. I appreciate your time. Take care of yourself. Right, I have to take a very quick break back with our listener, James, after these. Now, you may have heard during Community Garda information that a dark-coloured stroke brown Lexus car appeared to have been involved in two instances where items were thrown from the vehicle, damaging other vehicles. There were two instances. The guard's not connecting them because they simply can't at this point, but the indications were that they may well be connected. And I think I have potentially one of the victims of that appeal on the line with me. James, thanks for joining us.
Morning, Greg.
Right, so take us back. Saturday evening, it's daylight, 9:15 p.m. What happened?
I was heading home from work from Balbuffet, and I just hit the straight of the road there to Hall when I noticed a brown-coloured Lexus coming around the corner. It was basically over the white line, so I decided to slow my own car down, but as it got closer to me, a man got up through the sunroof. He had one hand resting on the sunroof and the other was down inside the car, but as he came forward to me, he let go of a bottle and struck the passenger side of the car. Now, I'm nearly 100% sure it was the driver who was handing him the bottles, because his hand didn't come up to the second time, and then he let go again, hitting the driver's side of the car. Then I quickly pulled the car onto the side of the road, but I was more focused on the man coming through the sunroof, because I thought, this is dangerous. If anything happens to this car, this man could be out there. So I lost track of the keeping my eye on the car. I kept my eye on Humlick.
So were you moving, John? I'm not sure if you mentioned this. Were you moving, driving when this happened, or had you slowed down or pulled over, or what was the situation?
No, I was driving. I was actually on my way home from work.
Okay.
And when I seen the car coming, I slowed my car down to 50 kilometres an hour, but I was still going.
I get you. So, in other words, you met the object, which would explain the damage, because you sent us in a picture, and for those watching the show, they can see it here now. And it must have hit at some whack, James. That's I can see two massive holes in the front of your car.
That much force, Greg. The bottles actually shattered. I could see them shattering in front of the car. But as I say, I was very glad that I did slow down, because if it hit the one screen, it would have put me off the road.
Well, I think, judging by the damage it did to the front of the car, and I know these windscreens are enforced, but you wouldn't know what could have happened there either, with the glass smashing or even coming in or whatever. You could have been very seriously injured, and luckily you slowed down as you did. Was it clear that the person out of the windscreen was chucking these bottles at you, James? Is that his intent was to smash the bottles off your car, do you think?
Well, I believe the intent was there, Greg, because the whole time he came up that road, that he was out of that sunroof, his right hand was inside the car the whole time.
Yeah.
No, and he had one, his left hand was on the roof steadying himself, and his right hand was inside the car, so he had a bottle, probably had a bottle in his hand at that time.
And
it didn't matter to me, Greg. Whoever was on that road should have been a learner, and a learner driver, a pensioner, or anything. That they were going to get that bottle.
Yeah.
Just so happened it was me.
Absolutely crazy. And it seems, unless there were two dark stroke brown Lexus cars, it seems these people were responsible for another attack on another car. Whatever was going through their pea-sized brains.
Well, I did receive a message from another man at Ross Gear that the same thing happened to him with the brown-coloured Nexus as well, but he managed to avoid the bottles. But I was travelling on that road from Ross Gear to Lufford. If anybody had any dash foot count there, he pulled out and passed four cars on that road.
Jeez.
So I'm sure if anybody had dash cam footage, that they would show it to the guards. I would appeal to show it to the guards. Or anybody travelling from Balbuffet, say, to Lufford Brown, 9:30.
Yeah.
Have the footage as well, show it to the guards, because you may not think that anything happened.
Yeah, it's so stupid. Like, I mean, and the significant damage to your car as well. I mean, these people need to be found and pay to fix your car, James.
Yeah. Well, as I say, Greg, I'm on here now in the garage here at the moment. I had her booked in for the test on Monday, which I had to cancel. That's what that cost me money.
Wow.
I'm here now with the garage man trying to price to get her fixed. Mm. But, and I can tell you, it's not cheap.
No, because, it's different if it was a dent. But however it's happened, and they've taken two holes out of it. So whether it's a patch job or panel job, who's to say? But either way, as you say, you know, it's not going to be cheap. Right, James, we need to get some information. As you quite rightly pointed out, these guys were obviously up to other stuff. Dangerous overtaking. Someone's bound to have a dash cam. Someone's bound to get the number plate. It's not just you, it's another guy. There might be other victims yet to come forward. And this is just pathetic behaviour, James. Listen, we'll see if we get anything. We'll pass it on to you. Obviously, people can contact the guards directly. That's probably the best way of doing it. But one way or other, we need to find a resolution. Because it's a wild gunk as well, James, isn't it? It's a shock, like, you know, because it feels personal. There's the bang. There's the damage to the car. Like, it's shocking for you.
It is, I, because, as I say, Greg, I was getting her ready for the test. I'd already spent nearly £400 on her on the Friday.
Yeah.
And then to turn around and happen this on a Saturday, and then having to cancel my test.
Yeah.
You know, it's... But the person that sent me on the message from the Ross Gear end, he got a partial plate, which I have forwarded to the Gardaí.
Okay.
But I don't know if they'd be able to work with a partial plate, but that's up to them, you know.
Well, I'd hope so. Do you get the impression it's an English plate, Irish plate, Northern plate?
It's an English plate.
All right, and the only reason I ask is just in terms of being able to track it down. I'm not trying to profile who's responsible. It's just in case of But that car could end up in a shed till next June as well. All right, James. Listen, I do hope you get a and I hope the car gets through, you get it fixed and get it through its test. Thanks very much for that, James. A real sickener. And two massive holes in the front of that car. His pride and joy. We're going to be back in the garden with Paul McLaughlin, Ballacdur Garden Centre. Probably, are we in the peak of growth at the moment? It feels like that. Maybe you've got some questions about what you can be doing around your garden, what you should or could or couldn't or shouldn't be doing around your garden, your hedge, your whatever it might be. I've time to address the parking app situation. Remember our worker in Buncrana? They were able to park the car in the parking the car park in Buncrana, pay for their ticket at 8:45, head into work for 9. For the last wee while, they couldn't. They could only book the ticket at 9 or have to leave work to do so. Well, the council says the provider of the parking app has made a change to the app on Monday to rectify another issue. It had a knock-on effect and people can't pay early morning before the zone opens. However, they can pay using the future pay option and select the start time, example 9 a.m, and select the number of hours required. Developers are currently working on a fix for the issue. This has no change to the paying display machine. So the answer is you can use the you can in the interim use the future parking section of the app, but the developers are trying to fix that. So it is not the way it's going to be forever. Okay, so that's good news, isn't it? And hopefully after our inquiries, the developer gets a little bit of a rocket up the bum.